Folks, all of you out there in the WGDR listening land, this is WGDR Plainfield and WGDH Hardwick, Central Vermont Community Radio, 91.1 FM and 91.7 FM. And happy Saturday, folks. This is Amy's Kids Show, and we're going to be doing a bunch of fun stuff for the next hour. I hope everybody out there is ready to dance and learn and laugh and love all the things that we all love to do the most, right? And I need to let you know something pretty important here. Hold on a second. Community support for Amy's Kids Show is provided in part by Woodbury Mountain Toys, featuring a selection of toys and games for kids of all ages. Located at 24 State Street in Montpelier, Vermont, more information about Woodbury Mountain Toys can be found at WoodburyMountainToys.com. Come in and play with us. That's what they say at Woodbury Mountain Toys. How wonderful, huh, guys? Well, come on in and play with us. We're going to have a fabulous start to our fabulous Saturday. It's fall. It is the first week of fall here in Vermont, and we are feeling it. It's starting to look pretty out there with the trees changing and everybody scurrying around. All the animals are scurrying around, putting their food away for the winter. And I know all of us farmers and gardeners up here in Vermont are bringing in lots of food, so it's sort of appropriate that we are going to be celebrating food today. It's one of the things we love to celebrate here on Amy's Kids Show, because food is, of course, fuel for our bodies. It's how our bodies stay alive. Every single cell in our body needs fuel in order to live, in order to do its job, right? Our brain cells need fuel, our heart cells need fuel, our blood cells need fuel, our muscle cells, boy, do they need fuel, right? Especially if you're going to be out there running around and playing and scurrying around like everybody else is. That's a lot of fun, so we need fuel. And in our story that we've been reading, we are up to chapter 8. We're reading A Wrinkle in Time by Madeline Lingle. And today we are reading chapter 8, and it starts at a table full of food. That's where we left off last week. Our friends, our three friends who are wrinkling through time, looking for Meg and Kelvin, Charles Wallace and Meg's father. They're looking for him through space and time, and they're sitting down to a nice big meal when the story starts today. So we're going to be celebrating things like mashed potatoes, and also other things that aren't necessarily in the story, like spaghetti, which has a lot of carbohydrates. So do mashed potatoes have a lot of carbohydrates. That's a lot of fuel for our bodies, guys. That's why football players eat pasta before a big game, right? So they have the fuel to go. And then we're going to celebrate apples and bananas and see if you can crack the code in the apples and bananas song. Have fun, guys. Let's do a little boogie. And this is a twist and twirl song, so maybe you want to twist with your spaghetti. Thanks for joining me on Amy's Kids Show. Let's get started.
He's a master chef at an Italian restaurant. He's trained for many years. He can take anything you want and get it ready. But when kids come in, they grin and tell the waiter that they only want spaghetti. Like the way it wiggles and they like the way it squirms. They like to get the giggles and pretend they're eating lunch. And then there's meatballs. They will put them in the spoons and shoot them all around the room at other people. He could be making them a marinara, carbonara, prosciutto, ham, cavatelli, vermicelli. But I tell you, man, they want spaghetti. Make it for your daughter, you can make it for your son. You can toss it in hot water for a minute and it's done, but that's not cooking. And the children act absurd and slipping down like baby birds when you're not looking. You could be making them a fettuccine, scallopini, tortellini.
tortellini or linguine, minestrone, macaroni, provolone, pepperoni, ravioli, mostaccioli, but they say I only want spaghetti.
Spaghetti!
So twist.
On top of spaghetti, all covered with cheese, I lost my poor meatball when somebody sneezed. It rolled off the table and onto the floor, and then my poor meatball rolled out of the door. But the mush was as tasty as tasty could be. And early next summer, it grew into a tree. The tree was all covered with beautiful moss. It grew lovely meatballs and tomato sauce. So if you eat spaghetti,
Mashed potatoes, mashed potatoes. Brown beans and gravy, brown and strong. I love hearing them plop. I'll eat them till I drop. I'll eat my mashed potatoes all day long. Billy took his lunchbox to school on Maple Street. The whistle blew at 12 o'clock. The kids sat down to eat. They all took out their sandwiches and then they gathered round as Bill looked in his lunchbox and this is what they found. Mashed potatoes, mashed potatoes. Brown them in some gravy, brown and strong. I love to hear them pop. I'll eat them till I drop. I'll eat my mashed potatoes all day long. The family took an auto ride one sunny afternoon. The engine coughed and sputtered like a banjo out of tune. But now they've got it running like it's never gonna stop. Cause they emptied out the gasoline and filled it to the top with mashed potatoes, mashed potatoes. Drown them in some gravy, brown and strong. I love to hear them pop. I'll eat them till I drop. I'll eat my mashed potatoes all day long. We're landing spaceships on the surface of the moon. They took a step for humankind. They sang a happy tune. What they had found when they sat down, it wasn't made of cheese. They said to one another, would you take a look at these mashed potatoes, mashed potatoes. Drown them in some gravy, brown and strong. I love hearing pop. I'll eat until I drop. I'll eat my mashed potatoes all day long. Last winter was a long one, it snowed most every day. And when our school was over, we all went out to play. My friends had built a snowman, my goodness, he looked fine. But they all fell down with laughter when they saw that I built mine of mashed potatoes, mashed potatoes. Brown them in some gravy, brown and strong. I love to hear them pop, I'll eat until I drop. I'll eat my mashed potatoes all day long. I'll eat 'em till I drop. I'll eat my mouth tails all day long.
I am buying bunches of bananas. They are turning yellow in the sun. I will hang bananas up to ripen. I will eat bananas one by one. On my cereal I will slice the bananas, splash the bananas, squish the bananas, mix them up with peanut butter. I love bananas. I believe bananas love me. Teacher found another ripe banana. She was so surprised that it was there. Teacher found another ripe banana. Sit down in her chair. On my cereal I will slice the bananas, splash the bananas, squish the bananas, mix them up with peanut butter. I love bananas. I believe bananas love me. Who doesn't like bananas? Nobody. What are bananas for? All I ask is a couple of bananas and then maybe just one or two more.
them up with peanut butter. I love bananas. I believe bananas are me. Who doesn't like bananas? Nobody. What are bananas for? All I ask is a couple of bananas and then maybe just one or two more. Larry got so very acrobatic. A spinning wheel. Larry got so very acrobatic. Stepping on a ripe banana peel. On my cereal I will slice the banana, splash the banana, squish the banana, mix them up with peanut butter. I love bananas. I believe bananas are beer. Mix them up with peanut butter. I love bananas. I believe bananas love me.
I like to eat, eat, eat apples and bananas. I like to eat, eat, eat apples and bananas. I like to eat, eat, eat apples and bananas. I like to eat, eat, eat apples and bananas. I like to eat, eat, eat apples and bananas. I like to eat, eat, eat apples and bananas. I like to eat. Apples and bananas. I like to eat, eat, eat apples and bananas. I like to oat, oat, oat apples and bananas. I like to oat, oat, oat apples and bananas. I like to oot, oot, oot apples and bananas.
Do you like to oat, oat, oat opals and bononos? I love that song. Did anybody crack the code out there? What's the code in that song? There's a bit of a code so that you could tell what the next verse was going to sound like if you had figured it out. And I'll give you a hint. Sometimes why. That's my hint. Sometimes why. Maybe that'll help you figure it out. But that's cool. So cracking the code, you know, is exercise for our brains. So if you were working on that song, you've already been exercising your brain today. And so we can exercise our brains in lots of ways, and we can feed our brains in lots of ways, and we feed our brains information. Our brains love information and thinking about things and putting the pieces of the world together and cracking the code, right? That's what our brains like to do. Well, not only do we feed our brains information, but they also need fuel so that our brain cells can do their job. Our brain cells literally fire. All of the cells in our body actually have a little fire that goes on, and that gives them the energy to live, right? So where does this fuel come from? Well, it comes from the food that we eat. We actually break down all the foods that we eat to basic molecules of sugar. And each cell in our body burns, literally burns that sugar in like a combustion process, right? And if you feel your forehead right now, you'll feel you're kind of warm, right? Most humans are on average in about 98 degrees. That's pretty warm, and that's partly due to all of that burning that fuel, burning that glucose, that sugar, burning in our cells, and our cells need oxygen in order to do that burning. So all of the systems of our body work together. You know, our stomachs and our digestive system helps us break down the food so our cells can get the fuel, and then our lungs and our respiratory system brings the oxygen through our circulatory system, which is our blood, and our heart pumping to bring that blood, and it all works together, and it all needs each other and relies on each other, kind of the way we do. So whatever you're going to do today, make sure you give your body some good fuel. Maybe you're going to have some bananas for breakfast. Maybe you're going to have mashed potatoes for breakfast. Hey, I like that idea. There's a lot of potatoes around right now. So at least at my house, I have purple ones and all kinds of potatoes. So I'm celebrating potatoes. And we are going to continue reading A Wrinkle in Time. We're up to chapter 8. And this is a story, a chapter book by Madeline L'Engle. And it is like a coming-of-age story. I think we talked about this last week, that it's really good for middle schoolers, especially, you know, kids in that age group, because it's about growing up. It's about, you know, passing, starting to pass from childhood to a little bit more of a responsible situation in life, you know, being more of an adolescent and taking action in the world to help others. And right now we've got Meg and her brother, Charles Wallace, her little brother, and their friend Calvin. They are on a planet called Kamazots. And they have just met the man with the red eyes. And the man with the red eyes is sitting them down to a table full of food. Now, although the food looks delicious, it's actually, I think, turkey and mashed potatoes. It's not spaghetti, unfortunately, but there are the mashed potatoes. They're having a whole turkey dinner that smells delicious and looks delicious, but not to everybody, not to Charles Wallace. And so the man with the red eyes described last week what the food is like on Kamazots. It's not like food here on Earth. He says, "Of course, our food, being synthetic, is not superior to your messes of beans and bacon and so forth. But I assure you that it's far more nourishing, and though it has no taste of its own, a slight conditioning is all that is necessary to give you the illusion that you are eating roast turkey dinner." All right, so they're about to sit down to this meal, and Charles Wallace decides to try to figure out who the man with the red eyes is, and he just connected with the man with the red eyes, and this connection that Charles Wallace is having is changing him quite a bit. And the last sentence that we read last week was, Meg grabbed wildly at Calvin, shrieking, "That isn't Charles. Charles is gone." All right, so Charles is sort of mentally gone inside the man with the red eyes to try to find out what it is. What's this it that's controlling this planet? And he's a little boy, but he has a pretty intelligent brain, but he also doesn't realize what a little boy he still is and what a big job he's just taken on. Okay. Chapter 8. Oh, and the exciting part is we are about to meet, finally, Mr. Murray, Charles Wallace and Meg's father. They've been looking for him through space, and this is when they finally get to find him. So it's an exciting week. Thanks for joining me. Chapter 8, The Transparent Column. Charles Wallace sat there, tucking away turkey and dressing, as though it were the most delicious thing he had ever tasted. He was dressed like Charles Wallace. He looked like Charles Wallace. He had the same sandy brown hair, the same face that had not yet lost its baby roundness. Only the eyes were different, for the black was still swallowing up in blue. But it was far more than this that made Meg feel that Charles Wallace was gone, that the little boy in his place was only a copy of Charles Wallace, only a doll. She fought down a sob. "Where is he?" she demanded of the man with the red eyes. "What have you done with him? Where is Charles Wallace?" "But my dear child, you are hysterical," the man thought at her. "He is right there before you, well and happy, completely well and happy for the first time in his life. And he is finishing his dinner, which you also would be wise to do." "You know it isn't Charles," Meg shouted. "You've got him somehow." "Hush, Meg. There's no use trying to talk to him," Calvin said, speaking in a low voice into her ear. What we have to do is hold Charles Wallace tight. He's there, somewhere, underneath, and we mustn't let them take him away from us. Help me hold him, Meg. Don't lose control of yourself, not now. You've got to help me hold Charles. He took the little boy firmly by one arm. Fighting down her hysteria, Meg took Charles's other arm and held it tightly. You're hurting me, Meg, Charles said sharply. Let me go. No, Meg said grimly. We've been all wrong. Charles Wallace's voice, Meg thought, might have been a recording. There was a canned quality to it. He isn't an enemy at all. He is our friend, said Charles Wallace. Nuts, Kelvin said rudely. You don't understand, Kelvin, Wallace said. Charles Wallace said, Mrs. What's-It, Mrs. Who, and Mrs. Which have confused us. They're the ones who are really our enemies. We never should have trusted them for a minute. He spoke in his calmest, most reasonable voice, the voice which infuriated the twins. He seemed to be looking directly at Kelvin as he spoke, and yet Meg was sure that the bland blue eyes could not see, and that someone, something else, was looking at Kelvin through Charles. Now the cold, strange eyes turned to her. Meg, let me go. I will explain it all to you, but you must let me go. No. Meg gritted her teeth. She did not release her grasp, and Charles Wallace began to pull away with a power that was not his own, and her own spindly strength was no match against it. Kelvin, she gasped, as Charles Wallace wrenched his arm from her and stood up. Kelvin, the athlete. Kelvin, the boy who split firewood and brought it in for his mother, whose muscles were strong and controlled, let go of Charles Wallace's wrist and tackled him as though he were a football. Meg, in her panic and rage, darted at the man on the chair, intending to hit him as Charles Wallace had done. But the black-smocked men were too quick for her, and one of them held her with her arms pinioned behind her back. "Kelvin, I advise you to let me go," came Charles Wallace's voice from under Kelvin. Kelvin, his face screwed up with a grim determination, did not relax his hold. The man with the red eyes nodded, and three of the men moved in on Kelvin. At least it took three of them. Pried him loose and held him as Meg was being held. "Mrs. What's-It?" Meg called despairingly. "Oh, Mrs. What's-It?" But Mrs. What's-It did not come. "Meg," Charles Wallace said, "Meg, just listen to me." "Okay, I'm listening, Charles." "We've been all wrong. I told you. We haven't understood. We've been fighting our friend and Father's friend." "If Father tells me he's our friend, maybe I'll believe it. Maybe. Unless he's got Father under a spell or whatever it is, like you," Meg said. "This isn't a fairy tale. Spells indeed," Charles Wallace said. "Meg, you've got to stop fighting and relax. Relax and be happy. Oh, Meg, if you just relax, you'd realize that all our troubles are over. You don't understand what a wonderful place we've come to. You see, on this planet, everything is in perfect order because everybody has learned to relax, to give in, to submit. All you have to do is look quietly and steadily into the eyes of our good friend here, for he is our friend, dear sister, and he will take you in as he has taken me." "Taking you in is right," Meg said. "You know you're not you. You know you've never in your life called me dear sister." "Shut up a minute, Meg," Kelvin whispered to her. He looked up at the man with the red eyes. "Okay, have your henchmen let us go and stop talking to us through Charles. We know it's you talking, or whatever's talking through you. Anyhow, we know you have Charles hypnotized," Kelvin said. "A most primitive way of putting it," the man with red eyes murmured. He gestured slightly with one finger, and Meg and Kelvin were released. Thanks, Kelvin said wryly. Now, if you are our friend, will you tell us who or what you are? It is not necessary for you to know who I am. I am the Prime Coordinator. That is all you need to know. But you're being spoken through, aren't you? Just like Charles Wallace? Are you hypnotized too? I told you that was too primitive a word, without the correct connotations. Is it you who are going to take us to Mr. Murray? No, it is not necessary, nor is it plausible for me to leave here. Charles Wallace will conduct you. Charles Wallace? Yes. When? Now. The man with the red eyes made the frightening grimace that passed for his smile. Yes, I think it might as well be now. Charles Wallace gave a slight jerk of his head, saying, come, and started to walk in a strange, gliding, mechanical manner. Kelvin followed him. Meg hesitated, looking from the man with the red eyes to Charles and Kelvin. She wanted to reach out and grab Kelvin's hand, but it seemed that ever since they had begun their journeyings, she had been looking for a hand to hold. So she stuffed her fists into her pockets and walked along behind the two boys. I've got to be brave, she said to herself. I will be brave. They moved down a long, white, and seemingly endless corridor. Charles Wallace continued the jerky rhythm of his walk and did not once look back to see if they were with him. Suddenly, Meg broke into a run and caught up with Kelvin. Cal, she said, listen, quick. Remember Mrs. What's-It said that your gift was communication and that was what she was giving you? We've been trying to fight Charles physically, and that isn't any good. Can't you try to communicate with him? Can't you try to get in to him? Golly day, you're right. Kelvin's face lit up with hope, and his eyes, which had been somber, regained their usual sparkle. I've been in such a swivet. It may not do any good, but at least I can try. They quickened their pace until they were level with Charles Wallace. Kelvin reached out for his arm, but Charles flung it off. Leave me alone, he snarled. I'm not going to hurt you, old sport, Kelvin said. I'm just trying to be friendly. Let's make it up, huh? You mean you're coming around? Charles Wallace asked. Sure, Kelvin's voice was coaxing. We're reasonable people, after all. Just look at me for a minute, Carly Bus. Charles Wallace stopped and turned slowly to look at Kelvin with his cold, vacant eyes. Kelvin looked back, and Meg could feel the intensity of his concentration. An enormous shudder shook Charles Wallace. For a brief flash, his eyes seemed to see. Then his whole body twirled wildly, and he went rigid. He started his marionette's walk again. I should have known better, he said. If you want to see Murray, you'd better come with me and not try any more hanky-panky. Is that what you call your father? Murray? Kelvin asked. Meg could see that he was angry and upset at his near success. Father? What is a father? Charles Wallace intoned. Merely another misconception. If you feel the need of a father, then I would suggest that you turn to it. It again. Who's this it? Meg asked. All in good time, Charles Wallace said. You're not ready for it yet. First of all, I will tell you something about this beautiful, enlightened planet of Kamazots. His voice took on the dry, pedantic tones of Mr. Jenkins, the school principal, that Meg was arguing with in one of the first chapters. Perhaps you do not realize that on Kamazots, we have conquered all illness, all deformity. We? Kelvin interrupted. Charles continued as though he had not heard. And of course he hadn't, Meg thought. We let no one suffer. It is so much kinder simply to annihilate anyone who is ill. Nobody has weeks and weeks of runny noses and sore throats. Rather than endure such discomfort, they are simply put to sleep. You mean they're put to sleep while they have a cold, or that they're murdered? Calvin demanded. Murder is a most primitive word, Charles Wallace said. There is no such thing as murder on Kamazots. It takes care of all such things. He moved jerkily to the wall of the corridor, stood still for a moment, and then raised his hand. The wall flickered, quivered, grew transparent. Charles Wallace walked through it, beckoned to Meg and Calvin, and they followed. They were in a small, square room from which radiated a dull, sulfurous light. There was something ominous to Meg in the very compactness of the room, as though the walls, the ceiling, the floor might move together and crush anybody rash enough to enter. "How did you do that?" Calvin asked Charles. "Do what?" "Make the wall open like that." "I merely rearranged the atoms," Charles Wallace said loftily. "You've studied atoms in school, haven't you?" "Sure, but..." "Then you know enough to know that matter isn't solid, don't you? That you, Kelvin, consist mostly of empty space. That if all the matter in you came together, you'd be the size of a head, the head of a pin. That's plain scientific fact, isn't it?"
"Yes, but..."
"So I simply pushed the atoms aside, and we walked through the space between them."
Meg's stomach seemed to drop, and she realized that the square box in which they stood must be an elevator, and that they had started to move upward with great speed. The yellow light lit up their faces, and the pale blue of Charles's eyes absorbed the yellow and turned green. Calvin licked his lips. "Where are we going?"
"Up," Charles Wallace continued his lecture. "On Kamazots, we are all happy because we are all alike. Differences create problems. You know that, don't you, dear sister?"
"No," Meg said.
"Oh, yes, you do. You've seen at home how true it is. You know that's the reason you're not happy at school, because you are different."
"I'm different and I'm happy," Calvin said.
"But you pretend that you aren't different," Charles Wallace pointed out.
"I'm different and I like being different." Calvin's voice was unnaturally loud.
"Maybe I don't like being different," Meg said, "but I don't want to be like everybody else either."
Charles Wallace raised his hand and the motion of the square box ceased, and one of the walls seemed to disappear. Charles stepped out, Meg and Calvin following him, Calvin just barely making it before the wall came into being again, and they could no longer see where the opening had been.
"You wanted Calvin to get left behind, didn't you?" Meg said.
"I am merely trying to teach you to stay on your toes. I warn you, if I have any more trouble from either of you, I shall have to take you to it."
As the word "it" fell from Charles's lips, again Meg felt as though she had been touched by something slimy and horrible.
"So what is this it?" she asked.
"You might call it the boss."
Then Charles Wallace giggled, a giggle that was the most sinister sound Meg had ever heard.
"It sometimes calls itself the happiest sadist."
Meg spoke coldly to cover her fear.
"I don't know what you're talking about."
"That's sadist, S-A-D-I-S-T, not saddest, you know, S-A-D-D-E-S-T, Charles Wallace said and giggled again. "Lots of people don't pronounce it correctly."
"Well, I don't care," Meg said defiantly. "I don't ever want to see it, and that's that."
Charles Wallace's strange, monotonous voice ground against her ears. "Meg, you're supposed to have some mind. Why do you think we have wars at home? Why do you think people get confused and unhappy? Because they all live their own separate individual lives. I've been trying to explain to you, in the simplest possible way, that on Kamazots, individuals have been done away with. Kamazots is one mind. It's it. And that's why everybody's so happy and efficient. That's what old witches, like Mrs. What's-It, don't want to have happen at home. She's not a witch, Meg interrupted. No? No, Kelvin said. You know she's not. You know that's just their game. Their way, maybe, of laughing in the dark. In the dark is correct, Charles continued. They want us to go on being confused instead of properly organized. Meg shook her head violently. No, she shouted. I know our world isn't perfect, Charles, but it's better than this. This isn't the only alternative. It can't be. Nobody suffers here, Charles intoned. Nobody is ever unhappy. But nobody's ever happy either, Meg said earnestly. Maybe if you aren't unhappy sometimes, you don't know how to be happy. Kelvin, I want to go home. We can't leave Charles, Kelvin told her, and we can't go before we found your father. You know that. But you're right, Meg, and Mrs. Witch is right. This is evil. Charles Wallace shook his head, and scorn and disapproval seemed to emanate from him. Come, we are wasting time. He moved rapidly down the corridor, but continued to speak. How dreadful it is to be low individual organisms. Titch, titch, titch. His pace quickened from step to step, his short legs flashing, so that Meg and Kelvin almost had to run to keep up with him. Now see this, he said. He raised his hand, and suddenly they could see through one of the walls into a small room. In the room, a little boy was bouncing a ball. He was bouncing it in rhythm, and the walls of his little cell seemed to pulse with the rhythm of the ball. And each time the ball bounced, he screamed as though he were in pain. That's the little boy we saw this afternoon, Kelvin said sharply. The little boy who wasn't bouncing the ball like the others. Charles Wallace giggled again. Yes, every once in a while there is a little trouble with cooperation, but it's easily taken care of. After today, he'll never desire to deviate again. Ah, here we are. He moved rapidly down the corridor and again held up his hand to make the wall transparent. They looked into another small room or cell. In the center of it was a large, round, transparent column, and inside this column was a man. Father! Meg screamed. Wow. Another cliffhanger ending, guys. That's where we end for now. They did find Mr. Murray, thank goodness. And so next week we will continue with Chapter 9 and find out how they get him out of this transparent column. Boy, it's a very exciting story. Thank you for joining me. We have some more music coming up. We have a song from Madeline, which is about a naughty boy, which I thought might be appropriate to celebrate Charles Wallace's new personality. That is definitely not preferable to his old personality, for sure. But don't worry. Don't worry. He is going to come through this just fine, and probably a lot smarter, a lot wiser. And then we have a really funny ABC song, so maybe you can crack the code on that one, and maybe you can play the ABC song at home. We've got another Put Your Finger On song, because how did I know there were so many of those in the universe? But there are a lot of those. So we've got another one. And a little birdie to celebrate the birds who are getting ready for fall and to fly away and go to warmer places. So they're all busy right now singing and flying. And maybe you're seeing them out there like I am. So we're going to celebrate birds. Thanks for joining me, guys. Here we go.
But he is something worse. class asks an addled alligator all about an annual affair. Anthony ascends an Alp adroitly. Annika assumes an awesome air. Allison avoids an angry adder. Arthur's apprehending awkwardly. Angie's angling at an ancient Aztec. Arthur's after an apology. ABC, talk about ABC. There's no doubt about it, it's the place to be. ABC, talk about ABC. If you want to get anywhere, you've got to start with ABC. Billy banks a bushel of bananas. Berther beckons Bonnie to beware. Bessie buys a bigger barn in Boise. Bobby's bugle blows a blasting blare. Bertram's business is bussing baboons. Betty is a barber in Beirut. Barnaby is bashful, but he's buoyant. Pinky's bathing in his birthday suit. ABC, talking about ABC. There's no doubt about it, it's the place to be. ABC, talking about ABC. If you want to get anywhere, you got to start with ABC. Carol comes to call at Chattanooga. Carl cannot cavil or complain. Cassie Calder calls Camille contritely. Casey checks canoeing on Champlain. Caroline commiserates completely. Cora's cushion comforts Carla's cat. Charlie's cash collection is collapsing. Casper celebrates a careful chat. ABC, talking about ABC. There's no doubt about it, it's the place to be. ABC, talking about ABC. If you want to get anywhere, you got to start with ABC. If you want to get anywhere, you got to start with ABC.
Put your finger on your your finger on, put your finger on, put your finger on your tummy. Turn around and clap, clap. 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 Turn around and clap, clap.
Come to the end of Amy's Kids Show this morning. Thank you so much for joining me on this first week of fall. We have been celebrating all kinds of things, birdies and cracking the code, the alphabet code, and the vowel song, the apples and bananas vowel song. Did anybody catch that in the beginning of the show? That the code in the apples and bananas song was that each verse started with a different vowel. So it was apples and bananas, right? A. And then what comes after A? E. Eeples and beninis. O. Opals and bononos. And I-U, right? A-E-I-O-U. A-E-I-O-U. Those are the vowels. And it went in that order. I'm getting myself confused here now. I better go eat some carbohydrates. I think my brain needs a little bit of energy to keep functioning here. And that's what all of our bodies need is some good energy, some good food. And we are celebrating that with the first week of fall. We celebrated mashed potatoes and spaghetti, which do have a lot of carbohydrates, a lot of energy for our cells, and they can burn that glucose, that sugar, that molecule of sugar that's in our food and keeps our bodies going, right? So let's have a second breakfast or a third breakfast or maybe your first one. I don't know where you're at today, but it's a gorgeous Saturday and it's going to be a beautiful fall weekend here in Vermont and wherever you are. I hope you're having a great time. Thanks for joining me for Amy's Kids Show. We're going to continue next week with Chapter 9. Boy, guys, we've only got 4 chapters left in this book. We are getting really close to the conclusion, and I have to tell you, it's a fantastic, fantastic ending. And that's why I'm telling this story to you and sharing it with you, because it is a fantastic, fantastic story. So thanks for joining me. We will continue with that. And of course, some awesome music to go along with the themes that we are celebrating. So keep celebrating you, keep celebrating your friends and family, keep celebrating being human on this planet with all these other amazing creatures, birds and chickens and all kinds of other animals that we're celebrating. Well, chickens are birds. What else besides birds can we celebrate? Well, cats. I've had a lot of cat celebrating going on in my life. Dogs, rabbits, snails. I've seen a lot of snails out there, a lot of bugs. Dragonflies. I helped a dragonfly get out from my fence yesterday. I heard this rat-a-tat-tatting, rat-a-tat-tatting when I was over in the garden, and this dragonfly had gotten tangled in some of the netting that we had down there. And I let it go, you know, helped it get out, and it was so grateful to be free. And I'm grateful to be free. I hope you're having a wonderful celebration of freedom yourself. Thanks for joining me on Amy's Kit Show, and see you next week. Have fun, guys.
Restaurant, the menu 20 pages. If you read it back to front with all the choices.